You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guests today have been living the dream, sailing the seven seas with their kids, visiting some of the most beautiful places on Earth aboard their catamaran, Tanda Malaika. Their voyages have been documented in words and pictures for us all to share, and it really does appear to have been the most extraordinary adventure for them and for the children. But disaster struck a couple of weeks ago, and now their future is uncertain. We will hear all about that in just a few minutes. Danny and Belinda, welcome to Boat Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to begin by finding out a little bit about you both. Danny, am I right in thinking you're a pilot?
Yeah, I've been flying for about 30 years now. I started off as an Alaskan bush pilot, transitioned over to flying for the airlines, did that until about the mid-2000s, and now fly private jets. And sailing for me was an easy transition. And when Belinda and I met a few years ago, her dream was to sail around the world, and so we thought we're a perfect match, among other things. We decided, why wait until I retired? I could continue to fly, and we could be sailing around the world with our kids while we're still young enough to enjoy it.
Belinda, you and Danny, did you meet at 30,000 feet?
No, we didn't, actually.
Ah, okay.
We actually met online and started speaking on the phone and texting and emailing back and forth. And our very first phone conversation, when I asked him what his interests are, he told me that he was interested in buying a boat and living on it. And I said to him, well, that's my passion. You know, I want to sail around the world. And I told him about all the catamarans that I had been researching. And he told me about all the catamarans he'd been researching. And I was living in Hawaii at the time on the Big Island. And we met in Maui, and it was just absolute love at first sight. And we were married 4 months later. And
that's absolutely remarkable. I'll tell you, the other remarkable thing about you two is that you're not tired all the time, because you have how many children?
We have 11 children between the two of us. When we married, I had 7 and Danny had 4. So we have 11, and I just absolutely love it. I love his kids like my own, and he loves mine like his own. And we just, I just wouldn't have it any other way.
11 children, though. I have 2 children and I'm yawning.
Well, you know, once you get past 2, it becomes so much easier.
Yeah, it's you can't even really tell the difference anymore.
Presumably some of those children are now old enough to drive and have their own apartments.
Yes, most of our children are actually adults. And so really, you know, we have the 4 that had continued to sail around with us.
So they were traveling with you aboard Tanda Malaika. And am I pronouncing that correctly? Is it Tanda Malaika or Tanda Malaika?
Tanda Malaika. It's a Swahili name. It's a South African-built boat. We decided to give it a Swahili name, and it means guardian of the sea.
Can we place your accent, Belinda? Where are you from?
I was actually born in Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe. And when I was about 5, we moved to South Africa. So I was mostly raised in South Africa.
Are you both experienced sailors? Danny, maybe you could take this one.
Well, I grew up in San Diego as a teenager, and in my early 20s, I did a lot of sailing out on Mission Bay and Hobie Cats and absolutely loved it. Later in life, taking lots of vacations where I'd go out and charter a mid-size or bigger monohull. But Belinda actually had more sailing experience than I did.
Yeah, I took ASIC courses in the BVI on a catamaran. You know, I'd spent quite a bit of time sailing on cats and kind of, I guess, learning hands-on on cats. I'm actually a scuba instructor, so I've spent a lot of time on boats. I worked as crew on a monohull. So that's actually where I learned a lot, you know, more about sailing was when I was crewing.
How did you settle on Tanda Malaika? How did you find her?
It just seemed like the perfect boat for us. They always say there's no such thing as a perfect boat, but there can be a perfect boat for you. And we felt like this Leopard 46 was the perfect boat for us. And we didn't find it in Florida. We were told about one in Panama of a gentleman that was needing to get out of out of it in a hurry because he was in trouble with the Panamanian government.
So you found some fugitive.
Yeah, well, no.
Let's not call this guy a criminal. But he got into some sort of difficulty in Panama, and he's not a criminal at all, but he needed to sell his boat.
Yeah, he wanted to continue his charter business, and so he needed to sell Tanda Malika, and I was able to fly out to Bocas del Toro, Panama, with a surveyor, kind of went over the boat, and we were owners of a 2007 Leopard 46.
How much did you pay for her?
She was on the market for $350,000 US. After the survey, there were things that were kind of misstated on the listing, so we paid $280,000 for her.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
When was this?
2.5 years ago.
So she was less than 10 years old.
Yes.
A good quality boat, less than 10 years old, really big, and pretty well equipped, right?
That was the problem. She was a charter boat, and so that meant that her rigging and sails were actually in beautiful shape because she hadn't been sailed much, but her engines were pretty hammered. First thing I installed was AIS and radar. The second thing I did was add a water maker, and it needed an inverter. It needed, the house batteries were shot, so I put lithium ion batteries on her, and it was just one thing after another. So we sunk quite a bit of money into her over the next year in order to get her really cruising ready.
And Belinda, you're a scuba instructor, so you had a dive compressor installed on the boat too, right?
Yes, we had a dive compressor, and we had actually 11 sets of scuba gear.
And what was the plan? You were going to sail from Panama and head where? What was your first destination?
The original plan was to go through the Panama Canal and head right into the Pacific and head into waters that were near Asia. But we realized in sailing Tanda Malika that there was going to be so much work that needed to be done on her to get her ready for a trip like that. So we ended up sailing her up to Roatan, Honduras, and then over to Mexico, and then the Florida Keys, and over to the Bahamas, and then we did the whole loop all the way around the outside islands. We did make a diversion over to Cuba because we found out that the Rolling Stones were giving a free concert in Havana.
No, really?
Yeah, and we were front row to the Rolling Stones in Havana.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was the kids' first concert ever.
Well,
we ended up going as far south as St. Kitts, and then we cut across to Bonaire, and then Curacao and Aruba, and then over to Cartagena and back to Panama.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. I'm talking to Danny and Belinda, who've been sailing the world with four of their 11 children aboard Tanda Malika, a Leopard 46 catamaran. We're going to take a short break. Don't go away.
Hi, I'm Bob Bitchin from Cruising Outpost magazine, and I listen to Boat Radio whenever I get the chance.
Bonnie Lass Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Lass is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Lass Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielasscharters.com.
This is Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guests today are Danny and Belinda Govatos, who, along with four of their 11 children, have been visiting some of the most beautiful places on Earth aboard their Leopard 46 catamaran. in a few minutes, and we were going to get to this in the previous section of the program, but we didn't quite because there's so much to talk about. But in a few minutes, we're going to hear about the misfortune that has struck the Gavatos family a couple of weeks ago, in fact. But let's pick up the story. So, Danny, we had circled around the Caribbean, and then you headed back to Panama?
Yeah, we headed back to Panama. By then, we had a lot more experience sailing her. By then, we had done roughly 10,000 miles in her, and we had pretty much fine-tuned her systems, her water maker and the solar panels and everything else that we felt we needed for a long Pacific crossing. We went through the Panama Canal, which was an absolutely fantastic experience. On the Pacific side, we sailed over to Ecuador and then over to the Galapagos and then embarked on what ended up taking 18 days to sail the 3,000 miles from the Galapagos Islands to the Marquesas.
Okay, so that's the big test, right?
That was the big test, and I'll tell you what, it was the best sail we had done thus far.
It was absolute heaven.
It was beautiful. There were a few little, you know, things that happened, of course. We had a halyard break on our spinnaker and, you know, a few other things like that. But for the most part, it was just brilliant. We all got into the groove of night watches and everything else and caught a lot of fish and we ate well and we just had a great time.
The kids weren't missing stuff from back in the U.S. because you all lived in Oxnard, California, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, so they weren't missing TV or constant internet?
Not at all. We used a Iridium Go, so we didn't really feel cut off from anybody. We were still in touch. We were all together, and we were doing great, and the boat was running brilliantly, and the weather was absolutely perfect the whole way, and it was a dream.
The longer we were out there, the kids felt less of a desire to make contact with anybody. They loved it so much that a couple of days before we reached Marquesas, they said, you know what, let's just head in another direction and keep sailing because we're not ready for land yet.
And what have been the best and the most interesting or breathtaking places you visited so far?
You know, Marquesas was just absolutely amazing in that... you know, we'd been at sea for so long and had just seen the color blue for, you know, for 18 days. And then you reach Marquesas and these majestic green mountains, tall mountains, and so filled with coconut palms and so many other trees and the sound of birds and the smell of earth. And it was just so fantastic. The Marquesas really are breathtaking. We did love the clear waters of the Bahamas, and Danny and I are constantly, you know, bringing up lobster and that. But the Marquesas was just so striking. And then we went to Tuamotos, and when we were in Marquesas, we thought, okay, this is the most beautiful place on earth. And then we went over to Tuamotos, and then we thought, this has got to be the most beautiful place on earth. There's not tall mountains there, but the color of the water is just amazing turquoise color, and the waters are so filled with reef sharks. You get in and you swim, you know, with 10 or 12 reef sharks every time you go snorkeling, and so many beautiful corals and reef fish. And I think those two have been our most favorite places so far. Wouldn't you agree, Danny?
Yeah, I'd agree. The farther we headed into Polynesia, the more we began to love the people in the place that we're at. Polynesia has such a spirit about it.
Danny, where are you now? Where are you currently? Where are you speaking to me from?
We are in Auckland on the North Shore. We got here about 3 days ago after coming from French Polynesia. And we're staying with a family friends that live here until we get things sorted out and kind of get our plans firmed up of what we're going to do next.
Yeah, so I should explain, you are no longer sailing Tanda Malaika because disaster struck. And, well, Belinda, if I can start with you, take us through the events of that day.
Well, we raised anchor first thing in the morning because we knew that we had about a 10-hour sail ahead of us from Moorea, which is the next island over from Tahiti. And we were going from Moorea to Huahine, and it's about an 80 nautical mile sail. So we raised anchor early because, according to the weather, we were going to have about 20 to 25 knot winds, and we knew that, you know, in those kind of winds, we normally average 8 to 10 knots. So we figured, you know, the longest it would take us would be about 10 hours. So we raised anchor early and figured we'd probably be pulling into the anchorage in Huahine at about 4 in the afternoon, which, you know, which is a great time. So we set sail and... Well, actually tried to set sail, but there really wasn't much wind. There was no wind, actually. And we sort of tried to work the sails, you know, with very, very little wind for about half the day. And about midday, we decided to turn both engines on. And we just motored toward Huahine. And
how far did you have to go at that point when you switched on both engines?
We should have been there by, you know, between 3 and 4 in the afternoon. We motored as quickly as we could, and it was about 4 or 5 in the afternoon when the island came into sight. The winds, all of a sudden, about 10 miles out, kicked up to 25 to 30 knots, and they were coming from our port side behind us, and the seas kicked up even more, and it started getting darker and darker.
Were you nervous at this point?
No, not at all. You know, we had our charts. We don't like to go into anchorages at night, particularly on a moonless night, but we weren't nervous at all. I wasn't even concerned, and unfortunately, that's when all hell broke loose.
What happened exactly?
Well, I was up on watch, and Belinda was down below, and she was cooking dinner, and the kids, a couple of them were asleep in their berths. You know, everything was running as it should. Suddenly, I saw the depth indicator, the sonar, going from too deep to read, which are all, you know, hash lines. All of a sudden it popped up to 200 feet, and then it started rising. The bottom started rising very, very quickly to 125, 115, 95, 85, 75, 65, and then jumped way up to 8 feet, you know, 7 feet, just immediately. And so I turned hard to port, and just as a giant breaker wave picked up my port side hull, the boat went almost 90 degrees on its side, I'd say 75 to 80 degrees over on her side, and picked us up and slammed us onto a reef. I knew, I could feel both heels had broken off. I could feel that she was slammed very hard on the reef and most likely had some serious damage. And so things started happening very, very quickly after that.
Belinda, where were you? Were you in the saloon or were you below in one of the hulls with the kids?
I was actually in the galley. I had 2 hot pots cooking on the stove and then I had some food in the oven.
And just to be clear, where is the galley on your boat?
On the starboard side, you know, and then on either side are the steps going down into the hull. So the galley is actually on the main level. But, yeah, I was standing in the galley and one of my children, Micah, who's 17, she was standing on the port side of the salon just across from the galley. And we were talking and two of the children, the 19-year-old and our 15-year-old daughter, she was down. They were down sleeping in the berth. And our son, Aiden, who's one of the twins, that'll be 15 soon, he was just sitting reading. all of a sudden, you know, we felt the boat lurch up on the port side, and it went up so high that the fridge and freezer doors, which are, you know, metal and clamped in, I mean, they're actually latched. Those flew open, and all the food from the fridge and freezer came flying out. And anything that was, you know, on shelves or on the table or on counters or anything just came, they became airborne weapons, you know, and they just flew out. And then my daughter that had been standing talking to me, she flew across the boat, hit the starboard side, fell all the way down the stairs. And then as we slammed back down onto the reef, she was thrown forward into her berth, onto the floor, into her berth. And it was absolute chaos. And just as soon as we slammed down, another wave came and picked the port side up again and lifted us and slid us farther across the reef. And there was just so much scraping and bashing and the sound of water. And then, you know, you realize all this water is coming in through all the open hatches. And so at that time, the two kids that had been asleep were rushing around trying to close all the hatches. Our daughter, Emma, her immediate thought was, you know, she's got to help Danny up at the helm. And so she ran up to him. And as she was running, another wave lifted us up and she was thrown into the lifelines. So, I mean, we're so grateful she didn't end up on the reef. You know, and then she came back down into the stern salon area and saw that the dinghy was about to come loose, or she thought it was about to come loose. And so she went to go grab the painter line and she was thrown down the sugar scoop steps, and I thought she had gone overboard. So I was yelling, "Man overboard," and she was able to, you know, grab a hold of the rail and pull herself back up. Every time these huge waves would come, it would just the grinding sound and the smashing and the cracking and the sound was just horrendous. I mean, it was deafening, and I was calling out Danny, you know, making sure that he hadn't flown off the boat, and I was so concerned, and I couldn't hear him. And you know, and all this time I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is our home, you know. I mean, and the first time that I realized, oh my gosh, this is we're going to lose our boat, is when I heard Danny get on the VHF and say, "Mayday, mayday, this is Condamolycus," you know. And I thought it was just absolutely unreal to hear our boat's name along with the word mayday. It was devastating to hear that.
You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. I'm talking to Danny and Belinda Govatas, who had been sailing the world with four of their children aboard Tanda Malaika, a Leopard 46 catamaran. But as you've just heard, Tanda Malaika is no more. We'll find out exactly what happened after this break.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific. I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they're also the most resourceful, responsive, and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.
This is Boat Radio. I'm Mike McDowell. My guests today are Danny and Belinda, who, along with four of their children, were reefed aboard Tanda Malaika, their Leopard 46 catamaran, as they approached the island of Huahine in French Polynesia. Danny, you know, you'd done everything right. You're a pretty experienced sailor. You're certainly an experienced navigator by profession. You're a professional pilot and have been for three decades. How did you end up on a reef?
Well, you know, we've had a couple of weeks now to think about the events leading up to that. And there were a whole series of things that just kind of stacked up against us. There was the winds that were forecast just weren't there. And then the fact that our charts were, quite frankly, dead wrong.
Well, I just want to cut in there. Have you been in touch with the company which supplied you, or from whom you purchased the chart plotter?
That is one of the things that we are planning on doing. But to be honest with you, you know, I don't want to go off half cocked. I want to make sure that when I speak with them, I have all my bases covered. When we were rescued by the Coast Guard, one of the first things they asked was, which charts were you using? And when I told him what charts they were, he says, well, we have five or six boats a year that wash up on that reef by using those charts. So it is a known problem. It's a known problem as far as the reef by the French government, and why they don't have markers out on that reef, I don't understand.
How were you rescued? How did you get off Tanda Malaika?
This was the French Navy Coast Guard, and they were just absolutely fantastic. The pilot was absolutely top-notch. The whole crew was just very, very good. The wind was blowing 25 to 30 knots, and these guys put that helicopter in a hover directly over the boat, and they dropped that rescue swimmer right down onto the sugar scoop. It was amazing to watch.
Who was taken off the boat first?
They told us that it would take two trips, and that they would take four on the first run, and the rescue swimmer would stay with the remaining two.
And Jude went first, the 19-year-old went first, and for so long we're just only 46 feet away from each other, you know, at the farthest, and here she is, and her life is in this gentleman's hands that I don't even know, and I just watched her go up, and my heart just sunk, you know, but at the same time, I knew I could trust these guys, but it just, as a mom, it was just a tough thing to watch, you know, to see your daughter being pulled up to this helicopter, and the most heartbreaking thing was looking down as you're going up into the helicopter, looking down at your home there on the reef, and leaving her behind. I felt like I was deserting her, you know, and it was terrible.
Danny, what you're left behind on your vessel? What are you thinking at this point?
Well, of course I'm. You know, I'm looking up at a large part of my family that I love being flown away, and realizing, you know, it was such a strong realization of knowing that we were all going to be safe and that we were all okay, and realizing that, you know, how would I be feeling at that moment had I had lost one of them? So this overwhelming feeling of gratitude and love for them and gratefulness that nobody was seriously injured, that combined with the complete other emotion of feeling such sadness for our home, realizing that this was everything that we owned, sitting here on a reef, being smashed to bits.
This happened a couple of weeks ago. So you managed to salvage some belongings from Tanda Malika. And how have you been managing these last several days?
We've been doing okay. It took 10 days of dinghy trips back and forth across the coral, salvaging. And just in my blog, I wrote that I felt like we were just a flock of vultures descending on her and just picking her clean. It was terrible. It was heartbreaking. And some wonderful people on a Leopard 46 named Khanit Leva, David and Janet Hollier, they took us in, and another boat called Makara, they took, part of the family in as well. And between those two boats, we were able to bring everything off of Tanda Malika and put it on, on the boats and sort through and catalog everything. And
Danny, I want to talk to you about insurance. What was your situation with Tanda Malika?
Well, when we purchased her, we bought her outright. Insurance was very important to us, so we immediately purchased yearly insurance. And for almost 2 years, we had been with this particular company, and we had never had any problem with the boat. And so when we got to Galapagos, I received an email from them, and they said, we've decided not to renew your insurance for this next year. So I emailed back and said, well, why? And they said, well, we see that you're going to make a Pacific crossing, and we don't feel like you have enough sailing experience. And I said, well, why would you say that? Well, by this time we had over 12,000 miles of sailing experience. And they said, well, we feel that across the Pacific, we want you to have at least 3 people on board that had made at least 5 Pacific crossings.
Wow, that seems quite a tall order.
Yeah, it's exactly what I said. I said, that first of all, where in the world are we going to find people that have that kind of experience? And number two, we sort of know what we're doing. Anyway, they said, if you want to continue, you're going to be continuing without insurance until you get to Marquesas. And then when you get to French Polynesia, then we'll go ahead and write you another policy. Everything you do in sailing is trying to mitigate risk, and you can never be 100% safe. If you were, you'd never leave the dock. But Belinda and I talked about it, and we decided we'll go ahead and make the 3,000-mile crossing to the Marquesas and then deal with the insurance company on the other side, which was what we did.
But you got to the Marquesas, and you made another journey then without insurance, right?
Right. We kept going back and forth with the insurance company. They kept asking for more information and more information. In the meantime, the other problem we were running into is that our French Polynesian visas were due to expire. So we had to get to Bora Bora in a hurry so that in time that we could check out of French Polynesia and move on to the Cook Islands. So that was the thing driving us to Huaheine when we had to go.
I mean, I wonder, when you set off for Huaheine, was the lack of insurance on your mind or on Danny's mind? Was it with some trepidation that you cast off, or was it just business as usual?
For the most part, it was just business as usual, although any time you're sailing without insurance, it's sort of one of those nagging things at the back of your mind. But really, there's so many things dealing with safety and just different chores that go on every time you set sail. There really wasn't anything nagging on my mind because, I guess, for the most part, we were waiting for them.
What's your situation now? I mean, to put it bluntly, are you ruined financially?
Well, depends on what you mean by ruined. It's as if we had a $300,000 house burn up. It's that sort of ruin as far as we are pretty much starting over. We're definitely in dire straits as far as a place to live. We're homeless right now. And we have a very big bill that the French government is putting on us. They're figuring it's going to cost about $75,000 just to get the boat moved off the reef and taken to a place where she can be disposed of. And we are responsible for that as the owner.
Are you a cautionary tale now?
It definitely makes you take a closer look at things and you know, and just be so much more cautious about everything, you know. But the fact that we made it all out alive is just something that it's forefront in our minds, you know. And that is what it boils down to, is that we all made it out with nothing more than, you know, maybe a broken toe or some bruises and a sore back and a bunch of coral scrapes. And the other thing is that Danny is still able to fly. You know, he's a great pilot and he's still able to fly. And so we're going to get through this and we're going to be back on a boat again someday.
It has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you both today. If there was a magic wand, I would wave it, but there isn't. However, people can help you. There is, I understand, a GoFundMe page.
Our second oldest daughter, Kira, she started it, and it's so humbling, and we're so grateful for the love that we've seen, the outpouring of love that we've seen, and support from everybody through the GoFundMe.
It's not to buy us another boat or anything like that. We're trying to put together enough money to get Tunda Malaika moved off the reef and disposed of properly. And the people that have donated, we just can't thank everybody enough. It's been just so humbling for us. The GoFundMe if you just go to GoFundMe and search our last name, it's G-O-V like Victor, A-T like Tom, O-S like Sam. And it's, I believe it's help save the tribe.
I have to say, whatever the wisdom of your decision or otherwise, to me, your story is inspirational. I think you're doing a great thing. I don't think you were foolish. I don't think the loss of your boat was your fault at all, and I wish you the very best of luck in everything you do. There's a great deal more to this story to come, really. You have to find a new home, a new base. Tunda Malaika has to be disposed of properly, but also somebody, somewhere, some official has to address the problem of these charts and the fact that the French Navy are telling you that boats are being dashed on these coral heads every couple of months. It's not an acceptable situation. But that's for the future. In the meantime, Danny and Belinda Gomatos, thank you for telling this amazing tale to Boat Radio.
Thank you so much for
thank
having
you.
Us.
Thank you very much.
Bonnie Las Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Las is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Las Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielascharters.com.